RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
On the program now, Matt Shelton and Alison Goodwin of NZD SOS. Morning, you two. Thanks for coming on.
Morning, Paul. Hi, Alison.
Yes, hi, Matt. And hello, everyone else.
How are we today? You were expecting a hot one today, Alison.
Oh, yes. It's going to be a heat wave here in Hawke's Bay, another 30-degree day.
No, we won't get into why that's happening.
There'll be a weather alert.
Yeah, here we go. Code red. All right. Nice to have you both back with us. Who wants to kick off by commenting on the fallout, maybe, from the Phase 1 inquiry report, which was released super quick, right? Who wants to start?
Well, it's hard to dignify it, really, by talking about it. But talk about it, we must, I suppose. There were no surprises for us. I mean, we've been heavily critical of everything about it, as you know. And it was the predicted whitewash, but there was actually some sinister stuff in there too that I hope people didn't miss. You know, there was more about doing it harder and more effectively and more targeted next time. You know, there were no mea culpas, really. I mean, you know, in the summary they said there was, but when you read it, it was the litany of, well, didn't little old New Zealand do well?
Mm.
And given that they went as far as they could to not hear any evidence on the harms, you know, safety and effectiveness in their conclusions, Tony Blakely was you know, all over the you know, the benefits justified the risks, and you know, the mandates and the lockdowns and everything, you know, were justified because there was an unprecedented pandemic, all the usual rubbish that we've been hearing. Now we spoke to them for several hours. We submitted a lot of stuff. We uploaded what we told them. And yet we got just a sentence, you know, a mention that there were a group of doctors who'd been concerned about safety and were still making a noise about it. So there was that acknowledgement there.
And we're writing exemptions.
Yes, that's right. So we weren't surprised because we have been relentlessly critical. And so we have, you know, a little more hope in phase two, obviously.
Alison.
Well, yes, I sort of felt that the whole foundations of the pandemic weren't challenged. It was, you know, it was based on an assumption that there was a pandemic of a severe disease, and no one assessed, well, what happened, you know, was the PCR a valid test to use? Was it a pandemic of PCR tests? I mean, they used the anecdotes of Italy, you know, talking about what was going on in Italy. Graphic images from hospitals in Italy and elsewhere showed every available bed occupied by COVID-19 cases, operating theatres turned into makeshift intensive care units, and patients being treated in overflowing corridors and administration areas. Well, I don't know that they went to any length to verify that those were true images. It seems a little bit odd to, you know, to base your foundation on images from overseas, which may or may not be verified.
If you've got nothing, though, you'd try anything, wouldn't you?
Well, I guess so, yes, but there were plenty of PCR tests in well people. So, yes, I was disappointed that foundation wasn't challenged, that the basic assumptions weren't, you know, there wasn't any challenge and verification that there was actually a pandemic of unprecedented proportions.
Matt, you were about to say something.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. So, I mean, Italy and the US both came out later on and said we probably actually had about 10% of the COVID deaths that we thought we had. Right at the beginning, when we actually looked at what people died of. But irrespective of that, you know, the moment that you have the first verified death from a safe and effective vaccine, and a year earlier than that, the moment you understand that actually, in the big scheme of things, this was just an influenza-level illness, which, you know, nobody's disputing now, then the whole thing wasn't justified. You know, there was never a case for you know, any mandates. And in fact, even if the thing had been shown to prevent transmission and prevent infections, mandates still weren't justified on very solid human rights grounds that you know, have been agreed for you know, nudging 100 years now.
Seems to me they tried to separate it into two halves, a game of two halves. There you go. Rugby analogy, so everyone can understand. So they had the Delta strain, and there was the early, you know, reacting to those TV images and all of that freak-out responses. But then they kind of pivot, don't they, to say, well, then Omicron comes along and we went too hard after that. So they're trying to separate the two out is the feeling I had.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Paul. You know, and of course, what we have to remember is that actually the arguing about the masks and the social distancing and the lockdowns, none of which were justified anyway, and all of which have been criticized in the recent congressional inquiry actually coming out of the States. I have to say all of that pales into insignificance, you know, compared to the fact that people are dying and being maimed by the jab. And that's certainly the thing that in RCI 2 we're going to put front and center. And until there's a basic acknowledgement, not just of harms, but the degree of harms, you know, the kind of quantum increase in the reality of what's happening versus what is, you know, trickling out a little bit. I mean, there's a political party trying to get some capital by talking to vaccine injured and things. But the moment you acknowledge there are vaccine injured people and you think that they should be compensated, you're in a whole different ballgame where you should be calling out as loud as possible to have this thing withdrawn and a proper scientific inquiry, you know, irrespective of the crown or the royal aspect, you know, just based on the fact that it seems that citizens are dying and being maimed. You've got to do something. And that's certainly what we'll be sticking in front of the noses of the commissioners in the second one, is the fact of the harms, the fact of the deaths, the fact of the injuries. You know, I'm not basically pussyfoot about and you know, lean backwards to sort of, you know, look into how we can do it better in the future, which was the you know, the buzzword of RCI1.
Well, then you see the Hotez guy in the US listing off a whole scroll of incoming pandemics. So, you know.
They're so smart, these people, aren't they?
Yes, I mean, it's premature to be making recommendations. I mean, I did look through the 39 recommendations. I mean, I didn't read all 700 plus pages of the full report or the whole 100 pages of the others, but I did sort of scroll through both and look at, and I did read all the 39 recommendations. But, you know, there's some frightening things in there that seem to be slightly premature to recommend when we don't know, you know, we haven't verified the effectiveness of everything. So, you know, location monitoring of people, presumably that means some sort of device to keep tabs on where you go. And purpose-built quarantine options.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, gosh. And then establishing and managing regional boundaries. So, you know, parts of New Zealand potentially separated from other parts. The ability to scale up to deliver contact tracing, testing, vaccination. You know, so there's quite a lot of things in there that, well, recommendations based on the fact that everything was good that we did. And I mean, you know, he did say in the report some people had praised them and said, yes, well, that was good. You had a good response. But I don't know that enough New Zealanders actually want to be locked down again and contact traced and all the rest. I think we need a much bigger public discussion about that sort of thing. I mean, I would hope that the population would find that idea abhorrent to think that we could be locked down and in purpose-built facilities.
Yeah. Matt, it was about 18 months ago that we had that chat on the platform, and you had the list, right? The list. You know the list I'm talking about.
Yeah, the list.
Okay, how bigger is that list now?
Oh, look, I always I hate when people ask me that because I don't know what the actual truth is. But, you know, we're continuing to receive and find, you know, an endless barrage of stories in the media. You know, not just social media, but actually, you know, in the few legacy places that some people still think portrays the truth of people dying suddenly and unexpected, of, you know, the ubiquitous medical event, which is just a smokescreen to put people off and hide behind this notion of privacy and that, you know, clever people know what they've died of, but you know, the rest of us are too stupid to be told and we should mind our own business. But, you know, don't worry, clever doctors are working behind the scenes to make sure it doesn't happen to us and all that sort of stuff. And the new thing, well, it's not so new now, is the very rapid cancers, people presenting late, too late for treatment, too late to organise their funerals, too late to write a will. And you know, there is a solid and increasing scientific basis for understanding why this is happening. And there are well, there's a lot of pressure being put on the Australian government, certainly, and other places too, as this barrage of proof that the contamination of the vaccine with, I call it a vaccine, falling into that trap myself, with the DNA contaminants, which do and certainly can and do get into the nucleus of the cell and can potentially or actually cause cancer. You know, this is absolutely horrendous. You know, sci-fi horror movie stuff that makes your hair stand on end, that, like everything else, you know, no one is engaging with. So if the stories of you know, bright and hopeful people in the peak of their lives, you know, suddenly drop dead, you know, die in their sleep, die on the sports fields, you know, or are getting rare and aggressive cancers too late to do anything, doesn't get people's attention, then we really are in a very, you know, dark and dangerous place. And we will continue to shout from the rooftops as long as we can about the fact that this is happening. You know, how it's happened, who knew what and when, well, that's all coming out. And I mean, that's stuff for the Royal Commission, I suppose. But the first thing we've got to get across the line is the fact that it is happening. You know, and we are very keen for people to send their stories to the RCI too, so that there is, well, ideally, there's a list of people, well, there's a queue of people out the door, you know, around the corner, you know, stretching for miles, of people wanting to be heard in public to describe what's happened to them. But they should submit as well. And we've been thinking about how best to help people to do that. And I know, I think Alison's got some work she's been doing on that.
Well, yeah, I've done quite a bit of looking into it, well, and trying to understand the whole pharmacovigilance, you know, the safety monitoring, what's been going on behind the scenes, what's been happening, how has causality been assessed, and just found that it's very murky and there's a lot not being done. So, you know, I've spoken to and or looked at the documents of a number of people whose relative has died suddenly, and, you know, they've shared the post-mortem report with me, they've shared the coroner's report with me. Sometimes the fact of the vaccination the day before death is not even mentioned in those documents. And so I would say to people, you know, if you, you know, and I mean, it's difficult early on after the death, but if you're 2 or 3 years down the track and you're thinking, well, I wonder if that was properly thoroughly investigated. You know, I think if there are people listening that have got concerns about whether a relative's or friend's death was properly investigated, you know, we'd be happy to look at the documentation and just say, well, yep, okay, that looks like a thorough job was done, or actually, no, what about all these other unanswered questions? So I'd say to people, you know, if you've got questions, you want a second opinion, you want someone to look at it, get in touch with us via the website. And then, you know, I mean, we can potentially present those cases where pharmacovigilance from our point of view hasn't been done properly, just to show what's been going on behind the scenes, and we can't trust the data.
What is the standard response to someone dying? Do they automatically get, you know?
No, there's no automatic like post-mortem. No. I mean, some people do. But no, some it might be just a CT scan or just imaging, post-mortem imaging. Some it's sort of an external examination of the body, but they don't actually take any organs out or look at any tissues under the microscope. I mean, so you can see a bit doing that, but certainly looking at the under the microscope, you get a lot more information.
Could I get a private autopsy? If I had a family member that died, let's say, it hasn't happened, but there have been a few ill, but died, and I'm thinking, okay, I don't like this. I want a full autopsy. Can I order one? Can I, even if I have to pay for it myself?
Well, certainly there used to be, and I presume there still is, you know, at least some discussion with the family, because often it's the other way. Families don't want an autopsy done. And so if the family's really adamant and, you know, it doesn't seem suspicious, they might be able to say no. But, you know, there are stories of families wanting an autopsy and being declined. I don't know the honest answer about a private autopsy.
But it might come to that, you see. It might come down to that.
Yes. You can pay, if you can find a pathologist willing to do it, you can pay for a private autopsy. But, you know, in the list, there were plenty of stories, and there still are, well, they're small now, of people where the families have said, look, we're suspicious, or we want a post-mortem, or was it the jab? And they're just stonewalled, you know, all the way through from, you know, the first responders, you know, police, paramedics. There just seems to be this theme that people have been trained to kind of shut down questions and divert, you know, towards this ABV. You know, it's anything but the vaccine.
Well, yes, that's
this kind of elephant in the room is so big that you know, the roof of the house has just, you know, been well, the house is basically falling down, and the elephant's standing there shivering and naked for everybody to see, and yet everybody's still managing to ignore it. And it just points to human nature. And the quality of the, I mean, Alison's very polite. She doesn't use the C word when she's talking. But, you know, what seems to be a cover-up is you know, fairly obvious. And you know, the carpet's just not big enough to hide these bodies under. I mean, there's over 1,000 people who've successfully been given their ACC claim. You know, $11 million have been spent. And I think that was originally what was budgeted. You know, and that's a small reflection of the number of people who are trying to claim or being turned down. But, you know, that attests to the severity of what's going on, at least to some extent. So you can't say the thing was safe and effective.
Do we know how many have been turned down? Do we know how many have been turned down? Because that'd be a tell, wouldn't it?
Well, it'd be a fairly obvious OIA question to ask, and I'm sure it has been asked, and I can't remember. Alison, have you got a clue?
Yeah, no, I haven't got the numbers off the top of my head, but yeah, certainly people have done OIAs asking that. And, you know, the vast majority have been turned down. You know, it's only a small number. And I think most of them, it is for myocarditis. So people that are trying to claim for encephalitis, other neurological conditions, strokes, sudden death. They're, you know, they're just, you know, blood clots.
So they're giving, they're
just getting turned down.
They're giving, they're paying out for the obvious, the one that's out there, well, the people are talking about, but nothing else. Yeah. Is that really what's going on?
Well, that's from my observations. I mean, I haven't obviously seen everything, okay. But, yeah. You know, the other people that have been trying for other conditions. I mean, even people with myocarditis documented by a cardiologist are still struggling. Right. But, yeah, the ones that have been accepted seem to be mostly myocarditis or something like, you know, a sore arm or a sprain. I don't know how you get a sprain, but... You know,
by collapsing and you know, throwing your arm out to try and catch your fall. Probably.
Oh, well, maybe.
you mentioned a political party just before. I think, Matt, you mentioned, and you're referring obviously to New Zealand First. This thing is still being put in the arms of people, right, as we talk.
Yeah, down to 6 months old. Still,
where are they
at all stages of pregnancy?
Where are they yelling from the rafters, the rooftops, wherever? Stop.
Well, I can't hear that. And they say, well, look, I mean, we only did give them 6% of the vote. But I mean, they've got 8 MPs, they've got a deputy prime minister, a foreign minister.
Yeah, but it's okay to stand there. Sorry to jump. Sorry to jump in, but it's okay to stand there and say, we empathize with the harmed and all that. Hey, here's the real freaking issue. Stop it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's not enough to say, well, you know, we've got the inquiry, and we'll always be grateful, I suppose, and more grateful when we've seen its mettle, and assuming we have to wait several years for some sort of report. You know, that they'll always be the ones that got that agreement to get, you know, another RCI too. And looking at it ostensibly, looking at the terms of reference and looking at the people in it, you know, and frankly, I'm quite relieved that there aren't any scientists or doctors there, really, for a number of reasons. But, you know, we can't afford to wait. This is a rapidly moving train wreck now. And even if the thing was stopped today, you know, my view is it's going to take generations for the damage to be repaired.
I'm just thinking
possible.
Of the self-interest of butt covering, Matt. They know.
Yeah, but look, that's baked in the political process.
Yeah, but they know between now and whatever comes out is, you know, it's a problem because it's still out there. It's a harder one to explain why you didn't stop it back then. So why do they do this to themselves? I don't get it.
Well, I guess that's the political culture. I read a quote yesterday from someone that said, you know, the art of politics, you know, is keeping all of your sort of constituencies similarly disaffected. You know, it's all about compromise. It's all about, it's about the reins of power, I suppose. But the downside is that you know, they're visible and history will record, you know, what they didn't do. And I think you can't hide behind what you've done in the past when the thing is still plainly accelerating. And you can't just take the photo ops without acknowledging, you know, the really hard responsibility that you have to act on information that you've been given or that you've learnt.
Okay, so phase two is underway now. You made that point about scientists, and yeah, I'm with you on that one. So it's going to be a long haul. The media are probably going to forget about things for a while. Oh, the response of certain media personalities to phase one. There was a little bit of questioning. Christopher Hipkins was sort of questioned on it, but he's still walking around, smiling away. So what are you, any message for anyone thinking about doing anything with phase two?
Alison, do you want to go with that one first?
Oh, well, with phase two, yes, I did have one other thing apart from, you know, looking at your coroner's and pathologist report, is for people who have had an adverse event and had it reported to CALM, the Centre for Adverse Reactions Monitoring, to actually get in contact with CALM and ask for their AEFIA, which is Adverse Event Following Immunisation. I'm not sure what the A stands for. Ask for that number and ask for the causality assessment. Like, what did CALM decide? Did CALM decide it was related to the vaccine or not? And just ask a few more questions about what happened with their reports. Because again, I think they just go into a black hole and but there isn't much.
They've never had so many reports, right? This is like a tsunami.
No, that's right.
So even
normally.
I mean, it's so freaking obvious.
Yeah, normally they'd get between 3,000 and 5,000 a year for all medicines, and in the first year of the COVID vaccine, there were 58,000.
Well, there you go.
I don't know how they could assess them, but you know, the more evidence we've got that there is no assessment going on, the more compelling the case.
When you sit there and ask why, like why we got 58,000 compared to 5,000 last time?
That's been the theme all the way through, hasn't it? It's nobody's asking these questions, you know, absolutely barn door staring in the face, you know, horrific sort of new situation that we're confronted with. And there's just been paralysis and denial and pretending everything's fine, flat out deception, lying in our faces. And we're all prepared to sit here and take it. Well, we're not, you know, and I mean, we're all, you know, working our asses off in this chat, for instance, but people have got to, if we might be wrong about the extent of harms, but I don't think we are, right, almost every family in the country will have been personally affected, in their social connections by, you know, sudden unexpected illness, sudden death, blah, blah, blah. And they have got to tell the commission. The commission has got to understand the extent of the harms, because if you're in an echo chamber, if you got a batch that didn't have anything in it, then as far as you're concerned, things might be all right, and you can be blinkered and deceived that what we're hearing is just the normal, but it's not the normal. And I think people have forgotten how unusual it would be to have four or five ambulances going past your house in a day, or to have the rescue helicopter constantly landing on the top of the hospital, etc. You know, so you can triangulate all these different things, but it's not normal. Well, it's the normal now, but it's, you know, we shouldn't accept it. And people should go and they should present. They should tell their stories, certainly online, ideally try and get heard. I don't know if the thing's going to be a rolling roadshow around the country like the first one was. But we understand it will be public facing, and it will have the power to call people. And I have a feeling that they might have dropped the ball in giving it more teeth than they're going to want, simply because they didn't suspect that there'd be anything unpleasant coming out. And I think we should leverage that and really take advantage of that.
All right. We're coming up against time. Alison, anything to say before we end our chat?
I guess I'll go back to the first the report of the first one and just say that there was no discussion about natural immunity or treatment, as far as I could see. There was or even underlying health. You know, I mean, to me, the best preparation for the next pandemic is to have a healthy population, everyone with adequate vitamin D levels, everyone have access to real food, their type 2 diabetes reversed. So that would be my preparation for the next pandemic is to get the population healthy.
Well said. Thank you for coming on the program again, Matt Shelton. Thank you, Matt.
Hey, look, you're welcome. I mean, I'm interested in not having another pandemic at all, of course.
Well, I don't believe anything they say anymore, so ever anymore. This is the consequence, yep. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. We learn by experiences. Good on you, Paul.
Yeah. All right. And thank you, Alison, for coming in.
Oh, thanks, Paul.
All right, Alison Goodwin and Matt Shelton, NZDSOS. If you've got anything to say about what you've just heard, feel free to get in touch, 2057, inbox at realitycheck.radio.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.